however, have a list of the annual leaders in Brunsbatted Inn. As for 3 years during the first half of his career, he topped the American Legion RBIs, 1927, 1928, and 1930. And you can see that Elias has made the changes following my BRJ article in their 2012 edition of the Baseball Book of Records. Okay, that's the first half of Jerry's career. Let's move on to the second half of Jerry's career. Two things to note from this chart at this point. The day-by-day numbers and the saber numbers are identical. Second point, Gary led the lead for the American League in RBIs in 1931 and 1934, and Elias has them the same as the official records in the saber. Okay, let's start filling in the blanks in the actual column. We'll start with 1931. Combining my newspaper research with the play-by-plays from Messersheet, I've been enabled to determine that there were 15 RBI era games for the New York Yankees in 1931, involving a total of 12 players, and Lou Gehrig was involved in 6 of those RBI era games. And they're listed here. The game dates are shown in the left-hand column. The errors are mostly simple mix-ups. For instance, in the game on April 21st, Babe Ruth was erroneously given credit for one RBI that Lou Gehrig actually earned. In the next day's game, on April 22nd, Lou Gehrig was mistakenly given credit for an RBI that Tony Lazzari actually earned. Okay? And there's a few more mix-ups later on. There's one game on May 3rd where there was a botched decision by the official scorer. Prior to the 1931 season, the Major League Baseball very clearly and very specifically defined what an RBI is and what are the rules for awarding an RBI to a batter. In this particular case, the official scorer either didn't understand the rules or chose not to abide by them. But Lou Gehrig batted in Jimmy Reese with a ground ball RBI, an RBI ground ball. So when you go to the bottom of the column, you see that the day-by-day has 8 for these 6 games, RBIs. The actual is 9. Gehrig actually had one more RBI in 1931. And so for the full season, he actually had 105 RBIs, not 94. 1932. There were no RBI era games for Gehrig. 1933, there was one RBI era game for Gehrig. Again, it was a botched decision by the official scorer. The official records show one RBI. In actuality, he had 2 RBIs. One RBI scored on a bases loaded walk. Len Ruffin scored in that particular play. And the second RBI, Earl Combs, came home on a sacrifice fly by Gehrig. So Gehrig had 2 RBIs in that game, not one. When you put it down to bring it to the whole season, he actually had 140 RBIs, not 139. 1934, simple mix-up. Harry Smyth was given an RBI that Lou Gehrig actually had. The bottom line, Gehrig actually had 166 RBIs in 1934, not 165, and that is a league-leading total. 1935, another mix-up. Ben Chapman was given credit for an RBI that Gehrig actually earned, which gives the bottom line change. Gehrig had 120 RBIs, not 119. 1936, there were 2 RBI errors for Gehrig. Both mix-ups. The first one, George Selkirk was given credit for an RBI that Gehrig actually earned. Later on in the year, Gehrig was mistakenly given credit for an RBI that Jake Powell actually had. The bottom line, since the two canceled, is no change, no net change, and Gehrig actually had 152 RBIs, just as in the official day-by-day records. In 1937, one more RBI error for Gehrig. A mix-up with Bill Dickey. Bill Dickey was not credited with an RBI that he should have been, while Gehrig was given credit for 2 RBIs when he had only 1. The plays in question are that Gary triple, knocking in Joe DiMaggio, then Bill Dickey single, knocking in Lou Gehrig. So the bottom line for 1937 is that Gehrig actually had 158 RBIs, not 159. 1938, two more RBI errors for Gehrig. The first one involved a last decision by the official scorer again. Gehrig was given credit for three RBIs in the game. He actually had only two. One of the RBIs that the official day-by-day records show revolves around a runner scoring on a fielding error when there were two outs. Red Rolfe scored when Gehrig grounded to the second baseman who boxed the ball. Had the second baseman not boxed the ball and retired Gehrig, the inning would have ended and no one would have scored. So you can't give Gehrig an RBI in that particular case. Those are the rules for Major League Baseball scoring. Gehrig did have two runners that he batted in. He batted in Rolfe and Henrik with an RBI, with two RBI single. And the second error is a mix-up with Joe DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio was given credit for an RBI that he did not earn, whereas Gehrig was denied credit for an RBI that he did earn. In both cases, the two RBIs that Gehrig did have in that game were he batted in Frankie Frassetti, first with a double, and then with a single. The bottom line for the 1938 season is Gehrig had exactly 114 RBIs, the same as in the official day-by-day records, but there were two errors in the season. Finally, his last season, there were no RBI errors for Gehrig. He only played the first eight games of the season before he took himself out of the lineup for good. He had one RBI in those eight games, and that remained accurate. So, let's summarize. During the 1938-1939 period, specifically for the 31 through 39 period, I discovered and corrected 14 RBI error games from Lou Gehrig, with the exception of the 1932 season and the 1939 short season. There is at least one RBI error in every season that Gehrig played in this second half of his career. You'll note by the arrows in the right-hand column that in five of those seasons, there's a change in the RBIs that are presently, from what is presently shown, presently reported in the day-by-day results and also the Sabre encyclopedia. Both of his league-leading RBI seasons, the numbers have changed. 31 goes from 184 to 185, and 34 goes from 165 to 166. And in the lower right-hand column, corner in the cell, from my research, Lou Gehrig had 1,995 RBIs in his major league career. So, let's go back to the title of the talk, most RBIs by an individual player in his career for the AL. Elias Forsgaro currently has Gehrig with 1,994. My research says that Gehrig has 1,995 RBIs. I'm pretty confident that my 1,995 RBI number is correct. It has been accepted by a retro sheet. It has been incorporated on their website and their box score file and their player daily file. It has been accepted by Pete Palmer, although changes will not be made until after the season. I do not know what Elias will do with this information. That's not the whole story. I mentioned in the beginning that A-Rod is 73 RBI short of becoming the first American League player ever to achieve 2,000 RBIs. Nobody objects to that? Wow, what do you buy? What's going on?
Well, my recollection is Root's lifetime number is over 2,000, and that he only played in the National League a single year, 1935, and he didn't play all that many games. So I have a very hard time believing that Root drove in more than 20 runs in his brief time with the Braves. So he
Well, here's the data. Here's the data. The Little Red Book of Baseball, which is the direct precursor of the Elias Book of Baseball Records, and actually the Little Red Book of Baseball was published by Elias, okay, in their 1936 to 1971 editions, has George Herman Ruth as the AL leader and RBIs with 2,197. And they mentioned that he played with Boston and New York from 1914 to 1934. As I showed earlier, the Elias Book of Baseball Records 2012 edition has Lou Gehrig with 1,994. And then there's a parenthetical note at the beginning, introducing the RBI section, that says simply, since 1920, Friars Indians not compiled on official scores. So Elias, for whatever reason, has chosen to ignore or not count any RBIs that Ruth may have had in his season with the Red Sox from 1914-1919. That's Elias' position. It is not the position of Major League Baseball, at least as suggested by their official website, MLB.com, which shows Ruth with a lifetime total in the American League of 2,201 RBIs. So there's some more work needed there, and in fact, that's been done. And I will be talking about it at the Registry Board meeting on Saturday, which is Babe Ruth's AL RBI record. I hope you can attend. It's open to all Sabre 42 attendees. And before I close, let me conclude by telling you where I stand with Lou Gehrig. I have corrected overall 48 RBI errors in Gehrig's record. I have achieved a more accurate RBI record for Gehrig. I'm saying more accurate rather than the accurate, because there are 51 games out of this 2,164 that I do not have complete run scored and RBI details. However, this is very, very important. There is 100% agreement between the RBI information in the box scores for those games and the official day-by-day records. So I contend that it is very likely that the official day-by-day records are correct in those 51 games for the RBIs, and therefore I have considerable confidence that the Gehrig's actual lifetime total RBIs is 1,995. Okay, before we go on to questions, let me thank some people who have been very helpful to me in clearing up this second phase of research on Lou Gehrig. Freddy Borowski at the Baseball Hall of Fame, Cliff Bob, Steve Boren, Keith Carlson, Bob McConnell, Trent McCotter, Keith Baldwin, Connor Lane, Dave Smith, Gary Stone, and Dixon Tarango. I want to thank very, very much so the retrosheeters. There's no names, but there's hundreds of them, I think, who have contributed play-by-play information to build up this enormous resource of information that researchers can use to do more baseball research. And I'll summarize the last line saying, I thank you for the enabler of baseball research. And I thank you for coming and for your attendance. Yes?
Thank you. I really admire the kind of detailed work that you and people like you do. But I do have one question. The official rules of baseball are pretty firm on when an official scorer's decision becomes official. So it seems to be that changing an official scorer's decision 50 or 60 or 70 years later is the same as changing the vote for President of the United States, because the Electoral College miscounted in 1896, and Samuel Tilden should have been President of the United States, and not Rutherford B. Hayes. Would you like to comment on the logic of changing the official scorer's decision once the rules say it's become official?
Sure. And I'm not an expert on this, but I can certainly give you my opinion on this and what I understand it to be. The official scorer is required to follow the scoring rules set down by Major League Baseball. He must follow those rules. If he does not follow those rules, his decision is not valid. For instance, in the one game where there were two errors, where Ruffing scored on the base running walk, another runner scored on the sacrifice fly by here. There are a number of instances where an RBI was not awarded to a player because he walked. He did not bat in the run, he walked in the run. So they don't give it to him. That's not what the rules say. The rules say whatever causes the runner to score, the batter is better for an RBI. Likewise, there are a number of instances, perhaps over 100, where a batter gets a home run and does not get an RBI. The official scorer is wrong. He makes his decision to get zero RBIs is not valid. Simple as that. So with regard to Russell Hayes and Tilden, you can't go back and change that. Okay, but we can change the errors in these numbers. And you can say that Tilden should have been president because this is the way it was. You can't go back in time. Here we can. We can say this is the way it is. Lou Gehrig had this many RBIs, and Babe Ruth had that many RBIs. Tom.
Yeah, I just want to mention that if you look at what the official score said, often it doesn't make any sense. It's internally inconsistent where a team has scored two runs in a game, and the opposing pitcher beat out two runs in a game, but one of the batters on the team had four runs, scored four runs. Well, you sure say, well, he decided that the batter had four runs, therefore he can't change that. Well, then you have a box score that made absolutely no sense.
No, excuse me, that's not the same thing. You can't go back to last week and say that Dwayne Wise did not catch that ball.
That's correct. That's an umpire's decision. You cannot go back on umpire's decisions.
But there's a rule about official scorers too, and the official scorer may change his ruling under the new rules up until the end of the game. After the end of the game, the record goes to the commissioner's office.
Right.
And somebody who works for Joe Torre can't change the decision on appeal. If that appeal period ends, that score is the score, regardless of whether it was an error. It's one of the facts of
right. Well, that situation, that outlet did not exist back in the 1930s, and so we can do that now. And if you don't like it, you don't have to pick it. You know, it's up to you. Yes, sir.
It seems to me the issue is our philosophy here that the story, in which case, the runner scoring, you call it sacrifice, I know it's a curve here, but whatever, scoring fly happened. That's the history of that game. The accounting aspect of it is for, well, what numbers do we put in? And you're right about that, in the sense that if you were giving out bonuses to your players, you're paying them, your contract said, you need this thing, RBIs, and you put that money. The official scores count actually is how those people really, by law, want to pay. But we are historians, and what we are trying to look at is what actually happened in the game. We can't put sacrifice fly on the record book because Reynolds is greater than you. But we can say this is a scoring fly, and as you point out, under the rules of the game, scoring fly is supposed to be RBIs. Okay.
Yes, sir.
I think there's a bit of a false analogy here. What the current deadline involved is judgment calls by the score. Was that a hit? Was that an error? That's the kind of thing that can be appealed. This, we're talking here about a different animal.
It's correct. Yes, sir.
Bird, you kind of let slide at the 185 of the junior in the record.
The 1995.
No, 185. Excuse me. Yes.
180. Yeah. In 1931, with Lou Gehrig getting one more RBI, the AL single season record for most RBIs is 185.
Yeah, but it's always been 184.
That's correct.
And recently you said Reaver Kaiser.
Yeah, so I will comment about that. So last year, Trent McCotter and I gave a presentation here. In Long Beach. Trent had done the research on the 1931 Yankees, and I had done the research on the 1970 Detroit Tigers. particular in Greenberg. And Trent, when he went did his research, he found five games with RBI errors, and they all canceled, so that Garrett's, according to Trent, Garrett's RBIs will remain the same 184. Trent's primary focus was on mix-ups. There was a mix-up in the players. And all those RBIs that Trent found were mix-ups. He did not even consider in his domain errors, botched decisions by the official scorer. And when I was last year I completed Derek's career through 1930, and when I began this next second half of his career, I could have just said, "Well, Trent did this, and I'll leave it at that." I chose not to. I chose to go through each single game myself independently, and I found this other error. And I submitted it to Retro Sheet and to Pete Palmer, and they concurred that Gary does have an RBI.
You just say winning five is a big story.
It is a big story. It is a big story.
Is Elias going to accept that?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything from Elias. Yes, sir.
So those 5 years, 1914 to 1990, the favorite Elias is considered a pitcher, not a player.
No, they're just saying he didn't have any. They're not counting any RBIs. I don't know. Elias is
part of being tracked.
They weren't tracked. They were not tracked officially. Ernie Lanigan tracked RBIs unofficially for the Sporting News from 1907 through 1919, and in the 20 they became official. So they can find RBI data in the previous four of Babe Ruth in 1914 to 1919. Yes, sir.
We have to stop it here.
Good. Have you submitted your research, your most recent research to Elias and MLB?
I have not yet done that. I have not yet done that. Thank you.
Presentation by Steve Black in 5 minutes.
Hi.
Hi.